Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the backroads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 11, Jugtown, USA. Quote, "Get big or get out," unquote. Earl Butts, Secretary of Agriculture, Nixon administration. They say potters make good cooks. Some do. More to the point, for ages, having things to put things in was crucial to subsistence survival. Not that anything's changed, we just don't think about it as much anymore. Obviously, diet dictates the type of containers we need for processing, storing, and eating food. And just as obviously, potters across the globe have made these containers for millennia. Thus the cooking assumption. Potters used to congregate where clay deposits and transportation routes coincided to best accomplish their work. Early on in the U.S., such communities were called jug towns. Imagine a U.S. map with a shotgun blast through it. That would be a jug town map. They were scattered everywhere, some big, many small. They were found in places from Yorktown, Virginia to Charleston, Massachusetts, and beyond. Some jug towns got bigger and more organized as time went by and pottery technology evolved. Particularly in the pottery neighborhoods of Bennington, Vermont, Utica and Albany, New York, Portland, Maine, Trenton, New Jersey, and elsewhere along the eastern seaboard. But all that was prologue. The big breakout followed the westward invasion of Native American lands. Gigantic jug towns, factory towns really, sprouted up, pushed west by the railroads. East Liverpool, Ohio, Monmouth, Illinois, Red Wing, Minnesota. After Red Wing, new jug towns were unnecessary. By then, railroads could deliver crockery just about anywhere. But something else was going on then as well. Advances in glass, canning, and, ultimately, refrigeration radically changed food preparation, storage, and even menus. The need for things to put things in was forever altered. For all those jug towns, big proved fatal. Handmade pottery faded to irrelevance. The necessity for food certainly made pottery important, but food almost killed pottery as well. After the integration of all those new food-related technologies, interest in handmade pots was just barely kept alive through China painting, the arts and crafts movement, and, later, even the GI Bill. But by then, Ray Kroc and his ilk, i.e. McDonald's and its kin, whacked us with fast food. There's little need for a plate or even a paper bag when eating a sandwich, burger, or wrap. About all that's left for potters today is the moral high ground of aesthetics. This was evident even in the founding of Jugtown, North Carolina, back in 1922. Nice, but not critical to most household budgets. Of course, many modern potters can eloquently defend their existence. Still, without a clear idea of where we're coming from, how do we know where we're going to? Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember that insightful observation forever inscribed on an early 19th century tulipware plate. Eating is for existence and life. Drinking is also good besides.